Now we're live.
All right, we're live.
Welcome another week of PBJ. How are you guys?
Good to see you guys.
Yeah, it's good to see y'all. It's been a
we missed a week.
Yeah,
we missed a week, and we kind of never miss weeks, right? So it was kind of a big deal. But you were traveling, and Max, you were traveling. So I was actually here, ready to do it, but you guys said
I was ready at 9 p.m. Berlin time.
I was not. I was in Santa Fe, but we'll talk more about that.
Well, we're back. We're back here. Steve was pointing out my orange phone. I already made a big deal of that 2 weeks ago. So I'll
on the show.
Yeah.
Oh, we heard
orange everything. I had an orange drink. I had orange everything. But now we've got our orange sign repaired and looking good right behind you there.
Yeah, we didn't really talk about it being broken a couple weeks ago. But
yeah, we did.
I thought we did.
Three weeks ago. Oh, did we?
Dude, Steve, what's going on?
Yeah.
what happened on this trip, bro?
We miss a week and I forget everything. Anyway.
We were also just commenting, we like Steve's jacket. If it gets too hot, what we've been told, if enough Bitcoin are streaming our way, it may get ripped off. So it's one thing we're testing payments for.
Depends on the comments. We're looking for audience comments.
21,000 Bitcoin, is that what we need? 69,000? <000?
laughs> Maybe.
All right.
Well, let's keep it as if I get too hot, I'm going to take the jacket off.
Start streaming the sats or Bitcoin.
So you got back from, do you want to start just with Berlin? Can we do that?
Yeah.
I know it's the third one in the...
Start with Berlin.
Because I want to hear, we actually got started, sorry, we took a mountain bike ride and we got started talking about Berlin the other day. But let's loop
back. We talked about it almost the entire ride.
Yeah.
Much to your chagrin.
you may be shocked to hear that Steve and I also chatted about Berlin.
Oh, all right then.
But I want to hear the whole, I want to hear the juiciest bits.
Yeah. I'm sure you saved the best for you.
I want to hear
the last show we talked to. I was in New York in the last show.
Oh, that's right.
And we talked about the chain code event I went to.
Yep.
That was just a pit stop to go to Berlin. I'd never been to Berlin. So
really?
Berlin, yeah. It's first time in Berlin. Yeah, I've been to Germany several times. Never been to Berlin though.
What'd you think? In general.
It was good. Yeah.
Isn't it Oktoberfest right now?
I liked it is Oktoberfest right now. So I had a beer.
Yeah. Is that how they do Oktoberfest? They have a beer.
Well, I got sick along with almost everyone else there.
72 ounces.
just a cold though. Nothing crazy. But
is everyone still annoying tattoos? I'm like, does it feel like Portland on steroids still?
Is that the Berlin vibe?
Oh yeah.
Portland on steroids.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like East Berlin. Everyone's like cypherpunk.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That vibe was present.
I thought you meant they were sending the reinforcements.
I think I already told DK this after. The cool.
Too soon, DK.
In Portland.
I'm aware. Yeah, well, okay. Either way.
Okay. We don't want to talk about reality. It's all fake news.
This could go bad. Yeah.
One thing I like to do when I travel is go for a run and then like do my sightseeing by foot. Cool. So a few of us went and ran at Tempelhof Airport, which I'd never heard of before and didn't know the history, but it motivated me to learn the history. First of all, it was just a cool experience to run on an airfield.
Nice. Yeah.
Have you ever run on a landing strip?
Definitely not, yeah.
But you have, right out here.
Oh, right. David pointed out that
Chrissy Field is a landing strip.
Oh, yeah.
The airfield.
Way to deflate a sales.
But this is it's a closed airport now, but it's like it turned into a public park. So it's like a 4 mile lap that we ran around and then we actually and on the landing strip. So that was cool. Super low fog, sunrise is a cool scene. But then it motivated me to learn about the history of this airport. And it was opened in like 1923. It was a major airport. So it was early and a major airport. But I think the most notable history is in the after World War II, like in 1948-49. This airport's in West Berlin. So it was a portion of the city that was controlled by the Allies, but it was landlocked to the like Soviets controlled East Germany.
Right.
And the Soviets blockaded in 1948 that region. So no supplies could get in. So the Allies then used this airfield to drop supplies. Mm. And it's just astounding the scale of what the operation was. They flew in, they had a flight every 3 minutes. Mm. For 1 year and 3 months.
Every 3 minutes?
Every 3 minutes.
Wow.
250,000 flights.
Wow.
So it's like crazy.
Dropping off supplies.
Dropping off supplies. This crazy operation. Anyway, so it's cool to do that.
You know, only the Germans could pull that off.
Well, it wasn't the Germans.
Yeah, never mind.
it was the Americans. So that was cool. But yeah, I mean, why did I go there? my own team, Spiral team. We have 15 people on our team. We had, you know, we're spread out all over the world. One person's actually is in Berlin.
Oh, nice.
But we have folks in Netherlands and all over the US. So we get together in person a couple times a year. This was our second meetup of 2025. So we did a three-day retreat. Just good to, you know, just like we like to be in person in our show in the City of Bitcoin. You know, there's a few people here that are on my team, but most of my team is not here. So it's great to get everyone in person. So we had a really good 3-day retreat. And then after that was a 3-day conference, BTC++, which Nifty Nay organizes. And she's absolutely rocking it.
She really is. Yeah.
You know, I first met her. She was an engineer at Square working on
Bitcoin. Oh, really? That's a long time ago. Wow.
Yeah. 2018.
Yeah.
And then she went to Blockstream, she got Lightning development experience, and now she's off on her own and just frankly kicking ass. So I think they're doing like 6 events this year and have 6 or 7 on tap for next year. And like, so this seeing the quality of this event, it's pretty impressive that they're pulling off that many events. So,
and all over the world too.
All over the world.
Brazil, Mexico. I went to the very first BTC++. Were you there in Austin?
No.
You might've been there. Well, that's where I met, Anthony or Tony Giorgio and a bunch of other people. Like, that was really good. But from what I hear, I haven't gone to one since, but I hear they just keep getting better and better. So,
yep. And so each event she hosts has a theme. So this one was Lightning. Interestingly, it's the first time she's done a Lightning themed event for BTC++, despite her having extensive knowledge on Lightning and contributions to Lightning. So I don't know how many people were there, maybe 150, but super high quality.
Kind of like workshops,
mostly developers,
presentations,
but honestly, like, when I go to conferences, I almost never go or listen to the presentations. I don't get a whole lot of value. It's all about the people, either meeting new people or people I've been working with for years but never met in person or whatever. I actually found the presentations at this event high quality and interesting, so that was notable. But like other events, the people were great. So there's a lot of Europeans there that I had not met before. Mm-hmm. So it's great to meet them. And it is definitely Lightning centric, but there was like Cashew and Arc and developers of other systems there as well that are, you know, building on Lightning or using Lightning. Companies, open source developers. So just a great group of folks. Most of Spiral stayed. Sort of trickled off day by day, but I did all three days. Some block engineers came as well. So it was good for them to get that exposure to different devs. I'd never met Callie before in person. So it was great to meet, you know, we had a great conversation or two. just many other devs. So really good event. I gave a presentation on Spark. We've talked.
Where can we find that, by the way?
It's on YouTube. It's definitely available. Like if you like the 6-hour video, it's, you know, timestamped it. But I don't know if or when it'll be published as a standalone video. But I mean, that works. So,
yeah.
I'd say that presentation was a culmination of my study the past 4+ months on Spark. We talked about Spark on this show for like an hour or so before.
An hour and a half.
So let's not get into it.
He had 1 or 2 questions?
DK, 42 questions? I think it was maybe 45, 50. It was like AI. He sent AI slot my way.
He DDoSed you, bro.
But actually, I
curated that hard. Were so many more questions. I generally like 1,000 questions. I was like, most of this is slop, but I actually don't know the answers to these.
We make fun of you, but when I reviewed my presentation, I looked at your document twice to be like, okay, am I covering?
Yeah.
They were legitimate.
That was the intention.
Thank you.
In the future, you probably want to talk to somebody about this. I still don't understand these topics, so help us.
Am I covering at least 30% of the 45 questions?
I gave this presentation at a Lit Devs event here a couple of weeks prior, just as a test, a dry run, and it took an hour. Lots of audience engagement and questions, though, so it was good, but it took an hour, and I only had like half an hour at this event. So I improved the visuals of the presentation, just rehearsed it, cleaned up, And I think, you know, delivered it in like 25 minutes or something. So
sweet.
It was, yeah. Anyway, let's not talk too much about Spark. We've talked a lot about it. But I'd say it's like the culmination of my study the past 4 months. And I kept learning more even up to the final days and weeks of that presentation. So if you're interested in learning more, go check out my presentation. Another really interesting conversation we had, it was with some developers working on Arc. Mm-hmm. And Arc, it's another protocol, like Bitcoin payments protocol, with a lot of overlap with Spark. They both use payment trees as like a fundamental building block. Arc predates Spark, so I don't know to what extent Spark was inspired by Arc, but Arc was, you know, proposed 3 years ago or so.
Yeah.
And they rhyme, so if Max, if you're ever going to rap about it,
yeah, like, yeah, Spark. Consider, oh, yeah, exactly.
I'm not sure that if that'll be brilliant or.
I think there's something around there, around Noah, maybe. We'll see.
But with Arc, there's now two companies that have been started to build Arc implementations. Arc Labs is one, Second.Tech is the other. I think they're going in a little bit different directions. My understanding with Arc Labs, they created Arcade. It's more token platform, kind of similar to Spark's business and product direction, it seems. Whereas Second.Tech is focused on Bitcoin payments more exclusively.
Right.
That's my understanding. And let's see. What's interesting about this? Well, I think from Second.Tech, they've iterated on like half a dozen different Arc designs over the past 1 to 2 years as they've been learning, and they just keep improving the design. And their latest design is what has me most intrigued. Because from my position and Spiral's position, we've been working on Lightning forever. And it's been, you know, people have been building products based on LDK for years. Each time they do it, they run into problems. Then we fix those problems. And then the next attempt gets better, but then runs into new problems. And we keep whacking away at these problems. So the good news is, and I wrote down a list of like 20 different things.
Not 45?
Yeah, sorry. I didn't use AI. It's actually based on my experience working with people trying to build with LDK, wrote down 20 different things, problems they've encountered, and then we fixed them. Mm-hmm. So that's great. So, and this is not an increasing list, it's a decreasing list, but there's still remaining problems. Some of which we were actively fixing and they'll get fixed as well, but there's some that are like fundamental challenges with Lightning.
Yeah.
And anyone who's tried to build with Lightning has learned this. It's not great for onboarding in terms of scaling. Mm-hmm. It doesn't handle load balance as well, and it doesn't scale to as many wallets as we would hope in the future, because each user has to have at least one UTXO mined on chain. Mm-hmm. So you're limited by your scaling is limited by the block size.
Rough order of magnitude, what is your latest thinking with Lightning as it is today? I know there's the future possibilities with covenants and channel factors and other things. But today, what do you think is a reasonable number of wallets that can scale via Lightning? Like order of magnitude.
Just Lightning.
Just Lightning alone.
50 to 100 million.
Okay. Still pretty good.
Yeah.
It's not every human and certainly not the AIs.
We're not even close to that limit. So that if there is sufficient demand, Lightning by itself can absolutely handle way more growth.
Yeah.
But then it does have this fundamental limit, and no amount of like, you know, it's not like a bug fix or something in LDK to extend that. You need a different protocol or some kind of protocol extension, which I'm going to get to in a minute. But I think that not handling low balances is a big challenge as well. Especially it depends on the use case. You know, if you have someone who already owns Bitcoin and they transfer in like $500 into their Lightning wallet and they go spend it, well, that Lightning wallets handle that perfectly fine. Like Phoenix is great, Lexi is great, et cetera. But we've talked about innovation where like AI is doing payments or brand new applications facilitating micropayments with Primal and Domus as examples on Nostr. Mm-hmm. And that's where you might get an influx of new users by the thousands and millions. Mm-hmm. And they only receive a tiny amount of Bitcoin. That's their first exposure to Bitcoin. So you need if we want to see that grow, you have to handle low balances. Anyway, so Lightning has some of these fundamental challenges. What's exciting about Arc, similar to Spark, is that it scales really well for onboarding. It can scale to basically infinite wallets, mm-hmm. and they can handle low balances. That sounds great, right? Why not just use Arc? Well, one challenge with Arc is that it doesn't scale well for payment volume. So as payment volume grows with Arc, it increases the liquidity requirements of the ASP or Arc service provider. And in the best case, that would just be a centralizing force and there wouldn't be that many ASPs. And in the worst cases, it wouldn't even be feasible for very large players.
Yeah.
So,
And has Arc always been kind of effectively like an alternative or a competitor to Lightning? It's kind of like a different approach, or it's always been considered a little bit of like a augmentation or complement?
I see it as complement.
Both. I think some Arc proponents see it as a replacement to Lightning, at least for at the end user device. We've talked about on the show previously, and actually, for people that watch my Spark presentation, there's a really good slide that shows the ecosystem with Lightning Network in the middle and all Fediment and Cashew and Arc and Spark all connecting to Lightning Network. Lightning Network is a glue between all these systems. It's clearly a win. And so Arc is complementary in that sense. But in terms of the end user experience, I think most Arc proponents see it as a competitor to Lightning, similar to Spark, similar to Cashew, similar to Fediment, that Lightning wouldn't be part of that end user experience. Mm-hmm.
And just to be clear, and maybe you can explain this a bit better. So for a bit of context, and we talked a bit about this, but I remember Arc from like 2 years ago or whatever. I don't know if this guy Brock is still around with it. He was famous for breaking Lightning and then he dropped Arc. And I remember when I read quickly, my like TLDR was, this is cool, but like the capital requirement is so high. Like it's just, okay, it's not that interesting to me. And I forgot it. Are you saying when you think about this as being complementary or competitive, I know you're going to talk about the capital requirements, how that's come down or could come down, but wouldn't anyone that's running an Arc service provider, maybe you can describe how this works, also need to hook into an LSP, whether they're running that or someone else as well? Or is there a world where they could just do this with no Lightning at all?
The Arc Labs design is not using Lightning.
Okay, interesting.
And the first 5 of the 6 designs that Second.Tech implemented didn't use Lightning.
Interesting.
And okay. When I say didn't use Lightning, I'm talking about like at the end user client, not right. Interoperability reasons. But
got it.
So that's why I'm saying that, like, I think most devs in that are working on Arc, I mean, it's in their minds it's a replacement for Lightning.
Hmm. Interesting.
But yes, I too had the exact same concern about Arc 2+ years ago, the liquidity requirements. Yet I was fascinated by all the I loved the innovation, like a new take on how to address onboarding scaling.
Yeah,
and so what I'm really excited about now, the context of Spiral, it very much cares about how do we scale Bitcoin payments to as many wallets and people as possible.
And bots.
Wallets, whether it's a bot or a human, but scale to as many wallets as possible while preserving as many properties of on-chain Bitcoin as possible, low fees, instant, etc. And Lightning checks many boxes, but not all the boxes as we just highlighted. Arc checks most of the boxes that Lightning doesn't, but then doesn't check other boxes, right? So what I'm very excited about is the last design that Second.Tech has been considering is to combine Arc and Lightning. Mm-hmm. And so within an Arc tree, at the leaves of the Arc tree, instead of having coins there, you actually have a Lightning channel or like a payment channel at the leaf. And such a design gives you the benefits of the onboarding scaling due to Arc and the payment trees and all the virtual UTXOs that it supports, and then gives you the payment volume scaling due to Lightning channels. Every time payments are made, you're not requiring the ASP to front more money during a period of time.
Right.
So it's a huge win for that.
Yeah.
And then interestingly, there's LSP and Lightning wins here too, because it'll be much cheaper to sort of right size the channel size.
Right.
Like with regular Lightning, If a user needs to change the capacity of their channel, like they're trying to receive more money and they don't have enough inbound capacity, well, then you have to do at least one on-chain transaction. Mm-hmm. Historically, more than one. With splicing, it gets optimized down to one, but it's still an on-chain transaction every time you want to optimize the channel size.
Right.
So that makes it really tough on the LSP, because the LSP will learn over time, oh, these users aren't really using the channel capacity that much. So it would prefer to like shrink it, because it doesn't want to tie up its capital in channels that aren't being used, right? So with adding Arc, you're able to right size those channels using virtual UTXOs, not real UTXOs. So it's much, much, much lower cost to do so. Mm-hmm. So I think this marriage can be super compelling. So that's something that Spiral is heavily studying right now, and we're still learning.
Is it live or is it theoretical? Is there open source code?
It's theoretical, although another thing I learned, what's great about going to these events, you just learn things you wouldn't otherwise learn. Another developer already took LDK and combined it with Arc Labs' Arc implementation.
Cool.
To prototype exactly this. And what's interesting is it requires a feature that I don't think any Lightning implementation supports yet, which mm-hmm. custom transactions. So Lightning has a specific script used for Lightning channels. And in Lightning channels, or in Lightning implementations, that's hard-coded to just that script. Or using it for Arc, you have to have a different script. Mm-hmm. So a feature that Leo, who works, he's on Spiral and
works on Bitcoin.
A feature he's been working on this year is custom scripts and custom transactions in LDK, so that a developer user of LDK can customize the script used.
Cool.
And like Taproot Assets needs this, RGB needs this, DLCs need this. There's lots of different use cases for this, but another user of this would be Arc. So he's made enough progress on this. It's in a branch that's not merged yet. But this other developer, Vincenzo, took that branch, took LDK, took Arc Labs Arc, built a proof of concept of this. So it's still early. Much has to be. I see Fleet Week is now. we have live Fleet Week right outside.
Live Canadian Fleet Week. Yeah. That's the state of our world right now.
But yeah, so we still need to. There's still technical questions to answer, at least for myself. We need to build it out. But regardless of whether Spiral does, it's my understanding Second.Tech is going to build this out.
I'm going to make a note of that. Second.Tech.
Yeah. Steven Roos is the founder. Cool. He came from Blockstream, longtime Bitcoin developer.
By the way, I know this is something we talk about in the old days of Nostra News and a lot on this show as well, is like how badass that this is the power of open source. Like you know, you're behind LDK and you didn't even know that people were building new stuff with it. That's what's so cool when you mm-hmm. just give away the code or just give away the ideas, man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
It's great. So I TLDR, I'm like pretty, I think this is pretty compelling as a long-term solution that checks most boxes that we want for Bitcoin payments protocol. And you know, once Spiral finishes its homework, we could very well become contributors to that code base as well and collaborate with Second.Tech and hopefully other open source developers.
And are most of the people who've been working on Arc for a long time generally warm to this idea of kind of like the combination of these two technologies? Or are there people who say like we want to take Arc in a very different direction or keep kind of isolated from Light?
Well, Second.Tech it's a small team. So, I mean, mm-hmm. I think they're pretty... I mean, they're the ones pushing this. So they're clearly on board with it. And I think that's sort of end of story. Not like the rest of the world doesn't know.
Yeah.
So they'll learn on this show. Arc Labs, I'm not sure what their view on it is. It might matter less to them because of the product direction they're going. But I don't know who instigated that proof of concept I mentioned. It might have been Arc Labs as well. So I'm not sure what their view on it is. But I mean, Arc's still a relatively small development community. So I think the reality is there's like 8 people that know about this.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Alpha League, baby. Let's go.
Yeah.
It's cool.
So yeah, I don't know. Any other questions about Berlin? It was overall fantastic experience.
Yeah. So the Arc stuff is super interesting to me. I clearly have to do my homework because I just kind of have ignored it for a while. So that's cool. What what was your general, actually two questions. One, what was your general takeaway on just like the state of Lightning right now? Because I think one thing that I'll get into is I have obviously on my own fund side, I've had, you know, a lot of chats with my LPs and a lot of stuff, you know, and the question I'm getting is like, okay, Lightning is awesome. Like, when are people going to actually be using this thing? So I'm curious, like, what is your general, I mean, yes, the answer is probably we need one of these like last mile solutions, whether it's Arc or Spark or Cashy, which is my other question. But what is your general thought on the state of Lightning today? If you were talking to someone who says, hey, you know, I've been super excited about Lightning, I read the white paper in 2017 or 18, whenever that dropped, like, when does this thing go mainstream?
Yeah.
How would you answer that?
Well, first, you made a comment, someone asked you, like, when's someone going to use it? But it's really the only thing being even used.
People
get excited about Cashew, Fediment, Arc Spark, but like, there's no usage on those yet.
I say that for someone coming from stablecoin land.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Bitcoin payments, from that perspective, Bitcoin payments aren't used.
Aren't there yet. Yeah.
I mean, we talk about this on the show almost every time. Yeah. There is no information in this event that there's no aha moment that like, oh, it's just around the corner. This is going to happen.
Right.
And then all of a sudden Bitcoin payments are bigger than stablecoin payments. There's no discussion about that.
Yeah.
No aha moment. So that remains to be seen.
Yeah.
But within the volume that we do have for Bitcoin payments, Lightning is most of it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's definitely, I mean, there's been a growing sentiment over the years that Lightning has failed or dead. You know, we've talked about that on the show as well, but you know, it depends on your perspective. If you thought that Lightning was going to be the silver bullet and 8 billion users having a mobile phone, mobile wallet on the phone and AI all using only Lightning, well, then you didn't understand the block size. But you know, we've learned other things as well around user experience. So it's, you know, it's not succeeded at that, but it's clearly succeeded at
the glue piece.
What are we going to talk about on the show next? Square launching Bitcoin payments.
Okay.
Well, it's not using Arc or Cashew or Fediment. It's using Lightning.
So, before we jump into that, I definitely want to spend a lot of time on the Square payment thing. My other question on Berlin, you said you got to chat with Callie. So, by the way, the talks I'm most excited, I definitely want to find your talk. I want to find Callie's talks. All of his are always badass, and Alan's talk. Because I know Alan has kind of been going more and more towards Cashew as well. Any new, I don't know, thoughts, takeaways on Cashew? I know you still have your same question, who's going to run the Mets?
Yeah.
But like, any updated thinking on that?
Well, there's definitely enthusiasm at the Berlin event around Cashew.
Yeah.
There's a hackathon and about something like half the projects were Cashew based. It's definitely like, it's so much simpler that it's easy to build and hack with it. So I think, you know, so that was one data point. Yeah, Callie's presentation, it was pretty, I don't know if you'd, it was a good presentation by him, but I don't know if you'd learn much. I mean, he went over a lot of like basics of Cashew, but there are some good call outs by him on where people could help the Cashew ecosystem. So still worth watching. I missed Alan's talk in person, but it looks really good.
Yeah.
So I've got
Alan Farrington?
Yeah. Alan's fucking smart. I mean, I recommend
it. I think it walks through like how the fiat system works and like basically teaches people how convoluted it is. And I'm sure I'll learn more about it.
Yeah.
So I do have that queued up, but I didn't see it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'd say that, you know, what was the vibe like for Lightning at the Lightning event? I mean, I think everyone, you know, everyone like sees Lightning as a success as the glue.
Right.
There's less discussion about it being like the end user solution.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Cool.
That was the vibe.
Cool. Right. From Lightning payments, you said that Lightning is kind of the way payments work. Is there any way that we can triangulate? I know one of the benefits of Lightning is that it's kind of privacy preserving or enhancing compared to, you know, traditional kind of on-chain payments. But is there anything we can know about the payments, like payment sizes or volumes or anything that might give us an intuition around how Lightning is being used? Like, is it used for traditional type of payment use cases an alternative to credit cards, or is it used for newly emergent use cases that maybe don't have any other way to do it?
Well, as you suggest, because it's private, that data is not publicly available. And we've talked about this before in the show quite a while ago about how the public metrics that are available are super misleading, or like the amount of Bitcoin locked into public channels has been pretty flat for three straight years.
Or even gone down.
Or even gone down. And yet we know that the monthly growth is like around 15% per month of payment volume. So it's just not, it doesn't help. And I say we know that, meaning like through private data sources. Mm-hmm. So,
and by the way, I think it's just worth mentioning because we talked about this like a year ago at this point. So for those who have not listened to every single episode of PBJ, what are you doing with your lives? but just in case there's one person that hasn't, what we talked about last time, the challenge, and this has been a challenge. I mean, you know, I've been investing in Lightning Network stuff forever. So have you, working on this stuff. And the challenge has always been, especially when you, to your point, DK, when you talk to people that are either in traditional payments or more in the crypto world, they'll say, oh, like, you know, I see Uniswap has total value locked of like whatever, $1 billion. Like, and I see in Lightning, it's been whatever, 5,000 Bitcoin forever, big B Bitcoin. And they're like, you know, that's interesting, but it's not that much. And so the point that, you know, when I first wrote my thesis on Lightning, hell, in 2018 or 2019, when I was, or no, 2020, maybe 2021, before I even had my own fund, you know, the point I always try to make to people is it's extremely capital efficient because it's a, you know, it's Tor, effectively, it's an onion routed network on top of Bitcoin where you can't know the volume in there. And it's extremely capital efficient because you can move in this peer-to-peer network back and forth at the speed of light. The challenge with that is like, okay, so we've got 5,000 Bitcoin locked in there. Like, that tells us basically nothing on payment volume. Like, it could be $100 million, it could be $1 billion. Like, we have no idea. And the only kind of like sense we've gotten of this, to your point, is private data. River published an excellent report, but that's been like 3 years ago now. And so River was saying it grew 2,112% or something like that in 2 years, or maybe it was 21%. I don't know.
1,200. I don't know. It was
a lot.
1,200%. It was a lot. It was like 15% per month. And then through other data sources since then, I know that it's continued growing at that rate. So a very healthy growth rate. I mean, to answer your question, David, there's not like super good insights as to what types of payments are being made. But I think there's a fair amount that are gambling sites. And there's a fair amount that's people wanting to access stable coins. So they might buy Bitcoin on an exchange and then transfer it somewhere else and then get Tether and then use Tether. So,
But can we guess at the transaction size? Like it sounds like for those use cases, they're kind of traditional types of payment use cases that just want more privacy, maybe. So would they be like traditional, like it'd be like a $20 transaction, a $40 transaction, not like a sub $1 transaction?
Yeah, I don't know offhand.
Okay.
That's a good question. I mean, I'll just put the call out there again. It would be sick if we had some website that tried to guess these. I know it's like very difficult to do that, but like, I do think that would change the questions you're asking. I think almost every normal investor, crypto person still has. I don't know what the answer to that is, but if you are listening to this and you have ideas.
Well, Spiral is doing our best to make that not possible by improving privacy.
Right. Which is great.
But having said that, I think what will help investors and others, and just frankly, just mainstream people feel like this Bitcoin is being used is if they just start seeing it show up on websites or in person. So,
and where might that happen?
So, you know, Square just released both Bitcoin conversions and Bitcoin acceptance in Square payment terminals. Mm-hmm. So I think, and there'll be like, you know, like the sticker, the decals that merchants show, like Visa and Cash App and Apple Pay and stuff like that.
Like, oh, cool. Like a Bitcoin sticker.
There'll be like a Bitcoin sticker, right? So I think the power of that is, regardless of how many people are actually doing Bitcoin payments,
it normalizes it.
It normalizes it.
Yeah.
Because you just go to your local store, you go to a store or whatever, and then you see the Bitcoin symbol. It's like, oh, it must, I'm not using it, but it must be being used because it shows the sticker there. Right. People must be using Bitcoin. Right. So I think that will help change perception just almost independent of reality and could actually be a self-fulfilling prophecy.
I like it.
So that's one angle, but Square had a big event this week. I think they're doing this like every 6 months now, where just to demonstrate to the world that like Square's
shipping. It's impressive.
Square's shipping, right? Yeah. And maybe after a few years of not shipping or not at the velocity desired, and I think that's that the Square is changing that, which is great.
It's cool,
including Bitcoin stuff I care about.
Yeah.
So conversions is a feature that's been available to a select number of merchants for quite a while now. It just simply allows the merchant to take a percentage of their sales and put it in Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Percentage of any sale. Like, so most of their sales are obviously, historically, all their sales have been in fiat. And if they just want to tuck away 1% or 10% or whatever into Bitcoin, they just like select that, you know, dial it in on their UI and then they're a treasury company, right?
I like that. Right.
And so that's available now, GA available to all merchants,
cool.
Which is really cool. That seems like a super pragmatic step for a seller, right? Like if a seller's been orange-pilled or interested in using Bitcoin as a savings vehicle, it's a dead simple UI that they can use to achieve that. And then the other big feature is that they'll Square will accept Bitcoin, and that's being that'll become available 100% on November 10th. So
for everyone,
it will be available for everyone.
Wow!
It's
meaning any merchant.
It's opt-in.
Enable
the merchant does have to opt. The merchant has to opt in.
And I saw in the announcement, I don't know the details, but it looks like no processing fees for a year. Is that true?
Yeah, for over a year, because like through the end of 2026.
That's pretty big deal.
It's pretty compelling, like, right?
Pretty shocking, actually. That's awesome.
Let's kickstart adoption, right? Yeah. Let's give merchants reasons to use it and merchants reasons to promote it to consumers to kickstart that cycle. So one thing I'm excited about is here in the Presidio, Alex and Haley and I have been chatting about like how can we get Presidio merchants to start accepting Bitcoin,
awesome.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. The food trucks.
Because I feel like if we can't make it work here, how's anywhere else going to make it work? We have a prime situation here where we have Presidio Bitcoin.
Everyone has Bitcoin to use.
2 dozen plus members and growing.
Right.
Who are here like many times per week.
Mm-hmm.
We have hundreds and hundreds of global visitors flowing through here annually.
I love it.
All Bitcoiners, high intention.
Yep.
Like, the kind of people who would go out of their way to go to a merchant and pay in Bitcoin. They might even start rock climbing if they can pay in Bitcoin, right? So whether it's food or a workout or service, right? So, we're gonna work on the merchants here and try to sell them whether they use Square or another solution, like however they need to enable it, be able to accept Bitcoin.
I love it.
And obviously, ones that have Square already, it'll be trivial to enable.
Dude, that's a great
idea.
Like
Bitcoin Jungle, Bitcoin Beach, Bitcoin Park.
Bitcoin
Arnhem.
Bitcoin Presidio. Well, I got to come up with a good idea. Yeah, I would love to extend that. Well, once we get a little bit of like traction with Presidio, we should get the Dolphin Club to accept Bitcoin as well. Because Lord knows I'm bringing enough Bitcoin people over there.
Yeah, yeah.
Trying to take as many meetings in the sauna as possible.
For sure.
That's the right
we can extend our reach beyond the borders of the federal land here in the Presidio.
It's still federal land, or city land, actually. I don't know.
But yeah, that's just like a fun little project. I think Square sales folks are going to help us as well. So
that's awesome.
We'll bring in the pros. but I think, it'll be fun. We'll learn a lot talking to merchants and seeing what those the experiences are. And it'll be great to have, it'll be like it's actually a win for Presidio Bitcoin, I think, because it's just another cool reason to visit Presidio Bitcoin because you just walk and go grab lunch and pay in Bitcoin.
Have you talked to anybody yet?
Only so far Cafe RX.
I was going to say, because that seems like that's indie enough that they could kind of make their own call.
Yeah, and the lady there, she's super nice.
She's super nice. She directed me to the owner, and that's where we're at right
now. Oh, this is awesome. Yeah.
So it looked great. So I think that's
and thing. They use Square.
Yeah, they're Square terminal.
They use Square.
Right?
Yes, mm-hmm.
It should be easy to flip it on.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
I'm stoked. Good work.
All right. Well, it's an idea.
Yeah.
In progress.
What about the stickers? Is Square going to make them? Or like maybe this is actually more Spiral because it's kind of like not Square specific, but the open
I suspect here. Square will be. Spiral's thinking of creative marketing ideas that, you know, aren't necessarily for Square, but is more generally for anyone in Bitcoin.
Well, that's what I mean. Because like then if you have just like just Bitcoin except here, no mention of Square, you could use it for Square or if someone wants to use BTC Pay Server. Yeah.
Haley is working on like a merchant guide for Bitcoin.
Dude, this is awesome.
That's awesome.
All right. I wasn't even expecting this. Cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Great. So anything final notes on the Square release or can we pop over to...
One idea I wanted to just mention while we're thinking about this, it'd be really cool if there was a way for Cash App users to orange pill the merchant too. I don't know what that would look like, but some kind of incentive where it's like, okay, I already get by on Cash App. If I get this merchant on, I get some kind of a sweetener too.
Right. There. I'm not as familiar with this new product announced, but did you see the neighborhoods?
Yeah, I didn't read the details, but I was thinking something along.
So it's marketing local businesses to Cash App customers. So if it's successful, it'll help the little guy. It'll help the small merchants.
Cool.
But I haven't used it yet, so I can't really comment on the user experience. But I can imagine
a Bitcoin tab.
I can imagine, yeah.
The neighborhoods thing is not Bitcoin specific. I can imagine we turn that in. The neighborhoods thing is not Bitcoin specific.
Yeah. But you can imagine integrations.
Yeah. And you could say, there's like these open maps where you can find people that accept Bitcoin. Like Albie has that in theirs. That would be super.
Yeah. BTC map.
BTC map. Exactly. Yeah. And they can even maybe integrate the same open source. That's awesome. I had one other crazy idea around this. Maybe it'll come to me later. That's cool.
Okay.
Cool. Nice. And just to clarify, I think the understanding here is if a merchant is accepting Bitcoin and the customer is using Cash App, then it's never touching like the traditional fiat rails, right?
I mean, if the customer is using any Bitcoin wallet.
Yeah, that's the cool part.
They could use a Cashew wallet, a Fediment wallet, Arc, Spark, whatever, right?
But meaning, it changes the layer around which these transactions happen. It sort of removes one of the big toll booths on payment.
Thus, that's how Block can offer zero fees for a year and change.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what the fees will be after that, but I doubt they're going to be 3%.
1%.
Right? Did they say 1%?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But I think that's like kind of a big deal because I think for the history of Square, it's always kind of been tied to the rails of, Visa.
Well, not entirely, because if you were a Cash App user, you could do Cash App pay at Square.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they gave you a discount, but that was just like an internal ledger.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long has that been around?
Is that 2 years, 3 years?
Okay. Years.
Yeah,
that exists, but like, Cash App Card, which has like something like 25 or 30 million customers, like it's very popular.
Yeah,
that still goes over Visa network.
Oh, yeah, I remember my crazy idea. This might be less appealing in the United States. I think this has huge potential internationally. Maybe it will be Square one day as they go internationally, or maybe this will be, frankly, even better as a local open source thing. Maybe it could work in the U.S. But one idea that actually, you remember when I was working with my homie Pablo, when we first met and we're like giving away Bitcoin to people in Mexico, which by the way, it was $3,000 back then. So I hope folks held on to all that. It's kind of crazy that all happened. We got Coinbase's nonprofit of all people to give us a Bitcoin to give away, which, at least they did something for Bitcoin. What would be really cool is to see, imagine in this map, so you have a map where you can spend Bitcoin, but you can even go a step further and basically turn every merchant that accepts Bitcoin into a local Bitcoins dealer. Now, this could get a little dangerous because if you have a lot of cash and like maybe it makes you a threat for robbery or whatever, but like just like imagine like you're like a corner store in Mexico and now your side hustle, in addition to accepting Bitcoin payments, is, oh yeah, I can just like market make like cash, Bitcoin, take a 2% fee or whatever it is. That gets wild and crazy because then you can have like a massive explosion of peer-to-peer trading, which, has a few benefits.
Yep. Yeah, you can imagine point-of-sale systems becoming like ATMs.
Right? Exactly.
Yep.
Turning everyone into a dealer.
Yep. Crazy. Bitcoin dealer.
Como quieres, wey. Como quieres.
We didn't do the trip report to Santa Fe.
Oh.
You want to... Yeah. Want to drop us at Santa Fe?
Yeah. So, I got a lot going on, which we'll talk about some other stuff, but I've been extremely busy the last 6 weeks. Fun stuff, which probably can't talk about, but a big deadline today. Then I've got the Type 1 Summit stuff we'll talk about. But last week was a fun trip. And the reason I couldn't participate in PBJ is I went to the Santa Fe Institute. I think you are. I don't know if you are. Are you familiar with Santa Fe Institute? You've heard of it, no?
A little bit.
So SFI, for those of you who don't know, is it's pretty famous in physics, I would say. They're kind of like known as like the hub for complexity science. And what does complexity science mean? Good question. I don't think anyone really knows, but the gist is studying kind of like emergent properties, I would say. So looking at systems and less from an engineering perspective and more from an evolutionary perspective. What happens when you put the pieces in place and then watch as, emergent systems emerge or evolve? And so I'm extremely interested in that stuff. I love thinking about what I'll call the holon theory, that everything in the universe is part and whole and part and whole, like cells, part of a molecule, is part of an organ, you know, as part of an organ system, as part of a human or a body, as part of a biosphere, as part of a solar system, as part of a galaxy, just all the way up and all the way down. And so most of academia, and my point is just, in my view, is just like a giant waste of time, because it's like super siloed and it's all this bureaucracy and crap. And like the peer review process, when you start learning about peer review, that's a clusterfuck. And but a lot of these academics are very, very intelligent people who could do really valuable things for the world. So one of the things we discussed on the show that you were proposing is like, how do we get like economists sitting in Bitcoin? Like, wow, wouldn't that be awesome if they were doing something useful instead of like fiat voodoo? And seriously. And so so one of my goals was, you know, I think if ever there was a place, so one of the reasons I'm so bullish and excited about open protocol systems like Bitcoin and like Nostr, because I view them as digital commons, which actually are a form of stateless socialism, which I view, and it was a controversial take for much of the Bitcoin community, but listen to my chat with Ben Ark on anarchism, FOSS, and the origins of Nostr if you're interested in those questions. But, you know, I view it as these as the substrates in which the next forms of human evolution, any evolution are going to emerge, right? Because you have these systems where they're open systems and it's going to mimic a lot of what happens in biology. So one of my personal goals, because I'm a fan of SFI, was to try and see if I can, you know, orange and purple pill some of the people there and get folks interested in doing this research. And shout out to actually our homie, Mark, and one of his colleagues is on the board there. And I was just like, hey, I'd like to go orange pill them, and got me in, which was cool. And I went and did some orange pilling. So my trip
undercover, or did you wear like an orange suit? Or
definitely did not. I did actually. I wore a pterodactyl shirt, so that my dad made. It was pretty cool.
Did you come in? You arrived. You arrived, and they knew that you had that as a research.
A little bit. I mean, that was not my only intention. I also thought it was cool, and I wanted to go and just. Yeah, I'd be part of it, but like, you know, I told Carl, the guy that helped me out, that was something I wanted to do. Anyways, so it was very interesting for many reasons. So there were, of course, some people I talked to that thought I was crazy, and that's fine. I'm used to that at this point, being a Bitcoiner. But there was a lot of really open receptivity to these ideas, and without doxing specific names. Some of the researchers. So there was one researcher who is a father of quantum computing, like. If I said his name, you would know it. It's a big deal, really big deal. And we chatted for a little while. And, at first,
we're not doxing him, though.
Yeah, of course. there's probably like two people.
Two fathers. Yeah.
Or mother. Anyways, we were chatting, and, you know, at first you get the whole, and this is why, I loathe and despise crypto. It's the only thing I, truly hate. Because it makes our job so difficult. It's like, I start talking about Bitcoin, it's like, I don't like all that crypto crap. It's like, believe me, no one hates crypto more than me. Trust me, no one. And I'm like, Bitcoin. And so what I found was really sort of effective with these folks is, you know, talking about the energy angle. You know, Bitcoin is this portal between the digital and the physical realms. And when I really hit with this guy, I was like, okay, this is an Einstein-Newton level breakthrough. And like you, DK, where I saw his eyes light up were on two things. One, I was kind of hinting, I could tell this guy wants a Nobel. And I was like, well, this is a Nobel type of project right around here. When I explained to him in great detail the difficulty adjustment, because he'd never, so anyone who's like actually extremely intelligent, physicist or whatever, if you can get them to just understand the difficulty adjustment, because he kept being like, well, who shifts the difficulty? And I was like, it's a cybernetic feedback loop. And when I finally saw him click on that, he goes, and for those of you who don't know, the difficulty adjustment, I mean, like the very high level thing that's super important here is miners, every whatever 10 minutes or so are supposed to get a block, they have to do solve one-way hash functions, which basically means you can just think of it as they're brute forcing Sudoku puzzles. It's not, it's a loose analogy, but they're brute forcing Sudoku puzzles. And you know, if they want to get the rewards from a block and the transaction fees, they need to append a number with a certain number of zeros, or they need to append a number to transactions to create a number hashed together with a certain number of zeros. If there's too much hash power, which means the blocks are getting solved too fast, then the system every 2 weeks self-adjusts and says, we need more difficulty. You need to post more zeros to get this reward. And if there's too few and it's too hard, then it says you need fewer zeros and you get faster rewards. That is a really, really big deal that like truly, truly, if anyone's super intelligent that like comes and uses, Bitcoin, it's a scam, like really, like if you sit down with them on this one point on that cybernetic feedback loop, I would be shocked if they're not blown away and become a Bitcoiner by the end of that conversation. And so anyways, when this guy finally understood that, saw his eyes light up. The second thing I chatted with him about was we talked about quantum biology. So he's very interested in light and very interested. So I've also been with my dad actually getting obsessed with plants since I've been gardening. There's this crazy book called The Secret Life of Plants. If you want to go way out there, like it's cool. But like photosynthesis is such a magical thing. Like you're literally taking photons in converting that into life. And so we jammed on photosynthesis for a long time. And when I told him, I was like, listen, dude, what's like the most magic currency in all of this? He was like, well, it's ATP. And I was like, exactly. Bitcoin is the digital ATP, which an idea I borrowed from Dhruv Bansal. Also shout out, if you haven't heard my interview with Dhruv, I think it's one of the, anything that guy's done is like quality. And when he saw that digital ATP thing, that's when I was like, there's a Nobel in here somewhere. So we'll see if we get a paper published on this. But I was.
So you're happy you went.
I was pleased on that one. Yes, I was very pleased. And
either the general vibe after you talked to a bunch of people that they kind of got it or came to a better understanding, or
some,
a lot of them.
Not everyone.
Were the people who didn't or weren't receptive, were they just very skeptical to start with, and they sort of bucketed it as?
Yeah, I don't think they were willing to do the time, or like this guy was actually willing to have the conversation and talk about the, you know, the feedback loops. So there was no one that I got that far in with. I don't think there's ever been anyone I've gotten that far in with that doesn't, you know, completely change their mind on Bitcoin. But yeah, for a lot of people, they don't want to take the time to go that deep. And that's totally fine. I was also talking about some of their wild ideas with folks. I talked with another very famous physicist there. Explain my views that consciousness came prior to materialism, and that he walked away at that point. So, you know, whatever, you gotta shoot your shots, but it was cool. I hope to stay more involved with that group.
Materialism meaning like tool building?
No, like, mind coming prior to matter. That's okay. A much deeper rabbit hole. the point is, it was really cool. I had a great time. Thank you, Carl and Mark. Shout out for making that happen. I hope that, we continue to, who knows, maybe I invited one of the guys to come to our event, you know, we're going to be hosting, which we'll talk about in a minute. But I hope we continue to build relationships there, because that is an institute where if anyone should be doing this kind of research we're talking about around complexity with Bitcoin and Oster, mm-hmm. It's them. So
before we get to the big event, I'm curious, did either of you guys attend the Oster event last night?
I did.
At President of Bitcoin?
Oh, yeah.
Can you, because I really wanted to go. So did Alex, but the two of us had a prior obligation to go to an EFF event.
Oh,
you talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I want to
hear
about that too.
But give us a lowdown of how the Nostra event, and the inaugural Nostra event at PB.
So I will, but that's awesome. On the EFF front, we're orange pilling all of the organizations that should be into Bitcoin that are not yet. Mm. So SFI, EFF, like right. Soon get the Internet Archive. We need to get all the cool people that maybe got a little shitcoining for a minute. Nostra Dev was awesome. It was the first one. Shout out to Dustin, who just made it. Yeah, like, you did a really good job. And also shout out to Alex. Appreciate the little star, by the way. That was dope. We got the good pizza. Like, anyone who knows.
Double missed out.
Yeah, man. Little star is the only way to go. It was delicious. But anyways, we had a good group come out. Some people, I won't dox them, but some people from like crypto land, I was shocked that fairly famous folks I had never met. I think Max is friends with them. I would say we probably started a little too late. So that was my only feedback to Dustin, because we got, you know, people came at 6 and we started at 7. We'll probably start at 6:30 next time. But he gave a great overview of Nostr. He showed kind of the magic of being able to like create an identity in Primal and then log in with Iris, and like you get the same graph and the same notes. And we talked about Highlighter and a couple other projects. I think one thing that really struck me from is presentation, which I will kind of shift my own presentation to people what Nostr is he showed them, he's like, when people ask me what is Nostr, I go to Awesome Nostr. And this is maintained by Algias, who is a longtime Lightning Bitcoin guy. And it's awesome because Awesome Nostr, like I was blown away. If you guys, have y'all been to Awesome Nostr yet?
I've seen it like a while back. I haven't been there in a while.
It's been a year. Yeah, I know you're talking.
You know what I mean? There's like awesome.
Just a GitHub page with a bunch of cool.
Exactly. Cool stuff. It's just a GitHub page. But the point is like, it's just like a year ago, it was like, oh, there's like 100 projects. Dude, thousands. He just kept scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. And yeah, a lot of it's libraries. And but like, while one dude in the audience was like, well, yeah, but that's libraries and this and that. And then he was just like, oh, I'm still scrolling. Well, I'm still scrolling. But I'm still, I was shocked.
I'm curious, out of the people that came, how many would identify as like Nostr people versus more Nostr curious?
Yeah.
It's a good question. I would say, so I don't know how many we had, maybe like 12 to 15, something like that. So it was not huge, maybe closer to 15 than some people left. I would say all but one were familiar with Nostr. One guy was just brand new and he came to Design Week. Most people, there were a few overlap from some of the Bitcoin events, but it was actually a slightly different crowd, which I thought was cool. I think everyone was also a Bitcoiner or Bitcoin curious, but there was definitely a different vibe. People that were more interested in like, yeah, building a new web, I would say.
Do you think the curiosity kind of biased toward the social media use case of Nostr that a lot of people talk about, or was it sort of biasing against that more towards infrastructure?
I think more towards the other stuff, the new ideas. And I think, so another thing, there was someone who came, who I definitely won't dox, but was very cool. The creator of Hive Talk came and gave a presentation.
Not doxing.
No, but it's a pseudonym. I'm not saying who it was, but it was a really, really cool presentation. And I walked away extremely impressed by that.
What is Hive Talk?
It's like Zoom, but you can use Nostr and Lightning. And very impressive. I was blown away by like how professional this person was and like how thoughtful. And it just gave me, frankly, a lot of confidence that like, you know, like you and you to a certain extent as well, like I'm pretty deep in Nostr, but I'm still like and this person was showing, you know, a bunch of like new sites. There's like a Nostr calendaring tool or app. Like, I didn't know that existed. Like basically just like showing me a ton of different apps I'd never heard of. Mm-hmm. So
that's great.
Yeah.
I think that event is just another example of us trying to bridge the gap in big tech and Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it brought in a new mix of people, which is super cool.
Yeah. Still a ways to go. And we have a long, But yeah.
It's a good start.
It's a good start.
Real quick, we are getting great audience engagement. I just wanted to like shout, give them some love. One comment I saw was someone said they might be here or be visiting soon. Can they help out with like the merchants? And I guess my response to that is like, don't wait for a merchant guide from us or anything like that. Just go to merchants, whether they're here in the Presidio or elsewhere, and ask, do you accept Bitcoin? That helps, right? Because it plants a seed.
Yeah.
Because like, if we go in and talk to a local merchant and give them the sales pitch, some will say, sure. And others will be like, you know, I don't have time or there's no demand. But if they've heard from other customers, Bitcoin, then it starts to build an image in their head of like, oh, there's demand for this. It's real. I should do it. So, you know, each and every one of us who goes and asks that question, I think helps. Usually when I ask that question, the response from the merchant is like, you know, quizzical or really has no idea what I'm talking about, or like, it's just basically no, right? But it's kind of a dumbfounded. In Berlin, I went to a coffee shop. One of my colleagues said, oh, you got to go to this coffee shop. They have amazing pour over. So I'm like, all right, it's local and pour over. I was like, great. So I go there and then I waited in line and then I get there and it says cash only. And I'm like, oh, I didn't have any cash with me because I just pay with Apple Pay and my phone. So I thought I'd throw a Hail Mary and ask if they accept Bitcoin because I could pay with Bitcoin from my phone. The bad news is no, but the good news, the shocking response though was the guy enthusiastically said, soon.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
Like, he's like enthusiastic. He's like, we don't right now, but we're soon going to accept Bitcoin. Okay. And he's like, he was all about it. And then he told me all about it. And they're like, yeah, we need to improve the 5G in our space to be able to do it.
Wow.
I mean, it was like, it okay, was real. It was real. It wasn't just like a polite response or something. It was real. Nice. So maybe a sign of things to come.
I love it.
I almost think as Bitcoiners, you could go to the places that you already go, that you already have a habit, maybe some relationship with the people behind the counter. And you can say, look, I would like to do this. I would like to pay in Bitcoin. You know, I'm a loyal customer already, right? Like I feel like if you have places that you show up three times a week, like maybe Cafe RX or something, if you go there and tell them that it's important to you, they will probably.
Well, we need to commit to each other. We need to start asking that question when we go pay
Let's
for stuff.
Do it together.
And people listening, if you care about this stuff, just even if you just does it once.
Yes.
I'm thinking out loud now, like we go to the farmer's market.
I was going to say farmer's markets are perfect.
Every week we go and we spend hundreds of dollars at the farmer's market and everybody is like, oh, can you do Venmo? Can you do Zelle? Because they all want to avoid the fees. Like they're very, very sensitive to the fees. But if we went to them and said, oh, can I pay in Bitcoin? I bet they don't get asked that too much.
Totally.
And that feels like the kind of, like you're probably talking to the decision maker
exactly.
Or the kid of the decision maker.
You found
maker or
one of the vendors at the San Rafael Farmer's Market, you said, does accept Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's kind of a punk underground, like, juice manufacturer, or something.
Yeah.
But it's only one. And they also have like XMR or whatever. They accept a bunch of other stuff too.
Nice.
But yeah, I thought it was nice to see the one, but I feel like because we're going there all the time,
and you're spending,
We're spending, and we're like, we have like a personal relationship with the farmer's market people. Okay. I feel like that's
Are we committed?
All of this?
Let's do it,
next show, or
I'm going to report back on...
We have to report back our experiences, and then maybe a lot of motivate people in the audience as well.
Oh, maybe I'll come. So, we're going to just spam Cafe RX at that point.
Yeah.
It's just going to be like, all right, we'll take your pick. but I poor lady. I do think your point on farmers markets is spot on because, like you said, they're decision makers. But also, I mean, I was shocked. I mean, I told you guys, I kind of accidentally converted my honey dealer, which is effectively a farmers market kind of guy. And, you know, he was super excited. And now I will say you have to be very, one note of caution with everyone is you need to be like very like, I don't know what the right word is, careful maybe in how you describe these people. Because at one point, you know, he was like, so let me get this. He's like, I want to make sure I understand this right. He's like, this only goes up, right? And I was like, okay, we need exactly. I was like,
what's your time frame?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, how long you got, dude?
Forever.
Yeah, exactly. Have you heard of the Federal Reserve? Ron Paul.
So we talked a little about the Nosser event. I want the EFF event Freedom of the Press event, which is an organization that I think sort of spun out of EFF. Alex and I went to that last night. I think it's important, again, this whole bridging the gap between Silicon Valley and Bitcoin. Not just tech companies, but also we've talked about universities before. And I think organizations like EFF make a lot of sense too. Like if you just look at their charter, their mission, their values, it just screams Bitcoin to us, but it doesn't scream Bitcoin to them historically.
Right.
So it just seems like it'll be challenging, but like it's a clear opportunity. So we had invited folks from EFF to our launch event here, and one of them attended. So that was awesome.
Oh, I didn't know that. Cool.
Because I think my understanding of like, you know, why are they not into Bitcoin? I don't know if I had the full
crypto.
Probably. Well, this is my I probably have a partial view, but what my understanding is that they're not into crypto. They've been inundated with crypto.
That's what I mean. Like,
yeah,
they hate crypto.
So they think it's a scam.
Right.
And then Bitcoin gets lumped in with that. So I think...
Well, no, one of them is like a board member of Filecoin, right?
There's a lot of Filecoin love last night.
Yeah.
That Alex and I noticed.
Archive also has like Filecoin sponsoring this.
And actually, like a guy I worked with at Google 15 plus years ago, a really great policy person, I know he went... Like I think he's involved with Filecoin as well. So, but I mean, what I suspect there is they have money to pay people
and they give it away.
And the high level story sounds good. Like, don't we all want decentralized data storage that you know, that persists, especially if we don't have to spam the Bitcoin blockchain, right? Yeah. So, you know, store it elsewhere. It sounds really good. And actually, the technology in Filecoin, from a pure technology standpoint, is like interesting and compelling. But if you look at the whole system,
right,
it's hard to see how it's going to work out, right? But that, I think that's like a next level analysis. So if you're not technical or you don't spend a whole lot of time on it, I think it's easy to be like, oh, this makes a lot of sense.
I think also so many of these ideas just get to be like popular for one reason or another. Maybe it comes from some voice that's trusted for some reason or another. And then it's just like, once everybody's talking about it, it feels normal. So yeah, you sort of stop asking questions and just, you know.
But in any case, I think in general, EFF inundated with scams, Bitcoin's been lumped in. So yeah, I think it's important that they meet real human beings.
Yeah.
We have a physical space here, the Presidio Bitcoin. And over time that they'll see, oh, these guys aren't scammy. They're also not just like greedy trying to make money. That's the only focus. We actually care about freedom money.
Yeah, yeah, principles.
And like all the things they care about with EFF, like we deeply care about too, and put those words into action. So hopefully they see that over time and that helps. I think Alex and I had a good time. Glad we went to that event, and hopefully there's more connections in the future.
Yeah, I wonder if there's an opportunity to do like have them co-sponsor an event here or something. Like, I don't know.
Potentially, several of them are going to be involved with the HRF, like Alex has, HRF AI event.
Awesome.
Which a small part of it's going to be hosted here at Presidio Bitcoin, and the rest of it, it's going to be in the Presidio. So I think there'll be some overlap there as well. And we also met an engineer there who had worked at EFF for 20 years, and he just got a job at a Bitcoin company. Lives in San Francisco, might even become a member here. So
great.
We might have recruited a member, but you know, he he's entering the Bitcoin space. So we have at least two Bitcoin advocates that are associated with EFF.
I love it.
So
great. That's awesome.
We'll grow that over time.
And again, I mean, just to kind of hammer that same point home, because I see someone else saying there, yeah, I'm stealing that. No one hates crypto more than me. It's not that I like being angry. In fact, I don't want to hate anyone or anything, but it's the same story everywhere. It's so frustrating when it's like, you don't understand, we're really trying to build a new TCP/IP for value. You know, we're looking at things like Nostr. Like, I think another thing that you should hit those guys with, like people at EFF, is Nostr. Because that's also very like, there's no money, there's no token, like it's not a get rid, there's literally no way you could pump and dump this thing. It's just your values.
I agree. I will say one thing that was a little surprising to me. I brought up, there's like a Q&A session, and I brought up chat control.
Chat control?
Yeah, what's that?
Yeah. We don't, what?
What's chat control?
Hey, what's chat control?
This is just like last night. I guess we should need to talk about it on the show. You guys don't even know what it is.
The signal thing in Germany where they're trying to.
Yeah. So there's a EU initiative. I believe it's the second time they tried to push it through, but chat control is basically ending end-to-end encryption messaging apps, because they would...
What?
Remember like... Yeah.
So wow.
Remember
who's
like...
Who's proposing this? This is
EU.
EU. Yeah, of course.
Or like, you know, countries in Europe that make up the EU. So I think it was 4 years ago, Apple implemented a solution which would just scan the photos in your phone and run them through a filter to match against like a CSAM database, and if it matched, then they'd alert, you know, the feds, and then you get in trouble. But Apple didn't know what the filters were, so the customers don't know what's in that database. Apple doesn't know what's in that database. Just some other
third party provider,
Third party provider, or government body or something knows what's in that database. And we can all agree that CSAM's horrible and horrific, but the concern is slippery slope, right? Like if once that infrastructure is in place and all our phones are being surveilled and all our photos are being looked at,
and then it's not transparent.
And it's not transparent. Yeah. So then other like things are added
social
to the list.
Score type stuff.
So So Apple implemented that, announced it, and then faced a lot of criticism, pulled it back, thank God. But chat control is similar. Basically, everything, all your messages and everything your like signal would be scanned by the government. And so it's just not private and it's not encrypted.
This is a proposal right now, or a
but there's concern. So like Germany has been against it historically, and I'm not an expert on EU governance, but basically, if Germany says no, this isn't going anywhere.
Right.
When I was in Germany,
they're funding everyone else.
There was a lot of concern raised about this because there are rumors that Germany is about ready to flip, and if they flipped, it would pass. And then, like, I mean, you guys use Signal, right? I use it to communicate with a lot of people in Europe. We would no longer be able to do that.
Wow.
And would that or it depends.
It depends. If they pass that,
level?
then an organization like Signal would have to choose. Do we just ignore and take the legal risks and heat, or remove Signal from Europe,
or put a back door in?
or put a back door in? Comply, right? That those would be their choices.
Is it being proposed around like a CSAM issue, or is it just general?
That's the
same kind of.
And to be clear, those are actually two different options. They could comply publicly, or they could say we're not going to do it and then put a backdoor in. But they could lie.
Yeah.
Lie and comply.
So, so like Meredith Whitaker from Signal was in Germany at the same time. Like, I mean, obviously it was like, not quite existential to Signal, but kind of.
Did you see, by the way, she's on Nostr now?
I didn't see that.
So this is big. This is one of the things that came out of Nostr Devs is we were on Nostr.band, shout out our tour. And one of the things it shows on the front page is like who's trending is like the biggest follows. Mm. She was number two.
That's great. So my understanding is Germany decided to vote no or not support it. So I don't think it's going to pass. Okay. But, you know, it's only a matter of time. Like when Germany has a change in who's in charge of the country, then that could change.
You said that's likely happening soon, or I don't follow German politics much.
I didn't say that.
Oh, okay. Just if it were to happen, it's always a possibility.
Well, I mean, it definitely, like, people don't live forever, so there'll definitely be new people in charge. Yeah. I don't know when.
But my understanding, I mean, this is maybe decades old, but my understanding is that Germany is maybe like the most privacy sensitive or conscious country that I know of that I could point to.
Yeah, but well, it sounds like that remains true in this case, but like it might not remain true forever. So it just boggles my mind that any country and any country's citizenry thinks this is a good idea. Yeah. I just literally don't understand that at all. And I mean, well, it seems like very simple-minded. If you're sold on like, let's stop CSAM, period, well then everyone's going to say yes, but let's think a little bit deeper about these issues, right? And how to like handle them and address them. So anyway, well, you guys didn't know about it either, but I was surprised that it seemed like no one at this event knew about it. I mean, that's even more alarming to me.
Yeah, EFS is all they do. But
it's more, well, it sounds like at least Freedom and Press, it's like US-centric.
Yeah.
But I So not only is this issue alarming to me, but you guys aren't even aware of it. They're not aware of it.
The people
that should be aware of it aren't even aware of it. So that's even more alarming to me. Like, no wonder the stuff's going to be rammed through because no one, there's no like, I mean, I guess Meredith, we've got Meredith over there.
No answer.
But yeah, so I was surprised. I thought that was going to be like a hot topic of conversation last night, and turns out no one knew anything about it.
Disappointing.
Well, what's the BitChat story? Any BitChat activity in the Berlin trip?
No.
Kind of conference, BTC++, feels like.
Sadly, no.
Okay. Seriously? At BTC++?
Yeah.
Did you try it and just didn't find anybody around?
Yeah. Nope.
Okay.
I'm shocked.
But what's interesting, I mean, with respect to chat control, like, would it apply to something like BitChat, right?
Yeah.
It's peer-to-peer, so how can they enforce it?
Well, it's not in the App Store. Mm. They enforce it by you can't install it on your phone. And Google just changed their App Store policy to be more like Apple's, where they don't allow sideloading. So
they don't allow sideloading now? I missed that.
Yeah, that was like a few weeks ago.
Is that proposed or already happened?
I think they decided it, but I don't know if it's already happened.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Man, it really does kind of feel like, to your point, like the Panopticon is like closing in fast.
So we can develop these great apps, but people can't install them.
Dude, this sucks.
You know,
scanning our eyeballs soon, man.
You want to talk about Taekwondo Summit?
Yeah. So
what do we have? We have 15 minutes left.
On a positive note, and perhaps one of the reasons I'm less informed than Steve.
informed, Max, utterly informed.
Max is busy.
I actually haven't
informed so about other things.
I've been shockingly busy the last couple of weeks. And shout out to the homie Alex. Second shout out for one show. He's been helping a ton. We've been hustling to get this thing together. So Taekwondo Summit, we have a whole episode on this you guys can go and listen to. But the thesis is we need to build a new grid because we have the old grids are an order of magnitude at least too small. And AI demand and other demand from things like quantum computing, electric vehicles, electric heat pumps, everything is going to require just too much. So data point, Texas grid, 80 gigawatts peak load. And there's about double that asking, or probably more now, asking to get built for data centers. There's no way the grid can take it. How do we get to terawatt scale grids? One of my crazy takes is going to be solar and storage. That's something we'll debate the show. Anyways, it's going to be a ton of fun. So we've been really hustling getting this thing together. You can check out type1summit.org and see a bunch of the folks that are coming.
Is the one an I?
No, the one is, I use the one as an I, but on the URL, it's the number one. So anyways.
But I asked.
Yeah, exactly. Now you know. But you can see we have an incredible group coming together. And I mean, on the one hand, it's a bit of a challenge because like, it looks like we're going to like radically oversubscribe to this thing. If you're still interested in coming, you should still apply. But, you know, full disclosure, it's gonna be tough to fit everyone in here.
Your original vision was like intimate, like 20 people or something.
It was. You know, and now...
Where are we at now, Max?
I don't know. Like, you'll have to ask Alex. He's running the...
Alex, or not Alex. Max's like enthusiasm and energy about the Energy Summit.
Well, it is
no bounds.
It's starting to spin out of control. And so, I mean, and we're a month away and it's just like, shit, like we really can't fit everyone. So we're looking at potentially bigger venues. Maybe we'll get it, maybe we won't. So, you know, hold tight if you haven't heard back from us. But if you are deep in this industry, we still have a few spots left for people that are, you know, super, super focused on solar batteries. If you're another energy source too, we're happy to chat about that, grids and data centers. The one big area that we're weak on now, I was telling you guys, that we really want
coal
is we got coal coming. Oh,
C O A L.
We have COLE, coal, the founder of Kila Energy,
Airbike,
which is cool.
Generation.
Hold on. We're weak on the kerosene point. So if anyone's out there punching whale blubber, you took it out of my mouth. Yeah. If you know Captain Ahab, we're trying to get an intro over there. I hope you do that. We also want to discuss making some modifications to the carry model. But
Yeah, I got you.
That's a joke. That's funny.
I got you.
Thank you, Diga. Anyways, so the one area that we're still super hustling on, if either of you guys have thoughts on this, actually, there's a few folks I want to mention by you as well. Maybe we can do that off air. But
Eon?
Who's that? Oh, yeah, him too. So yes. So it rhymes with Belon Tuss. And if we can figure that one out, we should definitely still give that a shot. We should talk about that after this. But
We do have to get the Tesla shareholder meeting moved, right?
Or no, because we've extended it. So we haven't even put this on the website yet, but I'm going to go ahead and just mention it. I'm really excited about this. Okay, so yeah, whatever. Fuck it. You listen to PBJ for the Alpha, right? So it was going to be originally just one day. We still have not announced the dates. The second
you just did.
Damn. Don't know what you mean. You need a hypothetical world. Fuck.
The LLM's got you.
The LLM's got me. Oh, well, whatever. It is what it is. I still don't know where it's going to be. So good luck. You know, just kidding. So we're going to have, I think, probably six or so incredible panels and then a bunch of really awesome breakout groups, probably four on the first day, panels, two on the second day. And a lot of awesome breakout groups. It will still be really intimate when people are sort of ideating. I don't want to give away all the panels. We're working on those right now. But like one that I'm super excited about is going to be, this took some work to get over the finish line, but a discussion with Ramez Nam and Casey Hanemer. Ramez was the first guy that went super deep on solar pilling, me at least, like 15 years ago. Futurist, like I think buddies with Ray Kurzweil. Really, really, really thoughtful, smart guy. And he was the one showing all the curves for solar and lithium ion storage. So he was basically being the one like solar and storage are going to disrupt everything. But this was like 20, 12 or something, and everyone thought he was crazy. And even he was too conservative. I would say this guy, Casey Hanemer, is like the new Ramez, and he's gotten very famous in the last couple of months. He's been on all the mainstream pods like Dwarkesh and everything, and like really trying to solar pill these guys. It's crazy to me listening like to people like him, Dwarkesh, and the mainstream Silicon Valley. They just can't quite wrap their head around it. But I think Casey's right. So what's interesting is those guys will be in conversation because there's a lot of things they can chat about that I'm know they agree on, which is very cool. But there's also things they don't agree on, such as, do we need continent scale grids and HVDC lines or not? So one vision of the world is it's going to be hyper local. It's just going to be everyone has their solar and storage. Maybe there is, you know, some local lines between, but it's a very hot topic of debate and one of the only topics in this whole field I really have an open mind on. I don't have an opinion. I mean, I have a slight leaning, but like super open to having my mind completely changed is, do we have HVDC high voltage direct current lines or not? So that's going to be, I think, for the energy nerds, one of the most interesting, maybe the most interesting discussion of the year. So I'm very excited about that. We're also going to do some really wild stuff just to give you a hint. We haven't fully booked this one yet, but I'm open to things like, obviously, you know, going behind the meter. We're going to have some of the best people in the world talking about building data centers behind the meter and how big those can go. I'll give you a little alpha drop. I'm playing with the idea from micro to macro dosing, the evolution of the fractal grid. So it's going to be pretty out there, but very good. And then I'm starting to think about doing something around like compute in space, because that's one I don't have an opinion on as well. It sounds crazy, but maybe it is, I don't know. But point is, this is going to be a day for the big thinkers to think big, to suspend disbelief, and imagine what a world could look like if we were starting from ground zero.
What? I mean, I'm super excited for this.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the latest thinking on how those who can't attend can learn? Things be live streamed, recorded? Will there be summaries published?
All figuring all of that out. And Alex has been helping a tremendous amount on this. And I know he's still figuring some of the pieces out on what we're going to have AV-wise, depending on where we are. But my current thinking is, I don't want to commit to anything yet because we still have to like figure out where we're going to be and all that, but we'll try and record, maybe live stream, but at least record the panels, assuming all the participants are okay with that. And then the afternoon evening discussions will be Chatham House. So maybe there'll be a summary, but it won't be attributed to anyone or anything. But we're going to do our best to get the panels filmed. And those, by the way, generally, I agree with both of you guys. I know you talked about this a lot with some of the conferences you like. I always just skip the panels. It's like a waste of time. This will not be that. I guarantee you these will be some of the most interesting discussions around energy in the world. We're also going to have some folks, still confirming exactly who, but some of the policymakers that are pushing for things like private grids in states like New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
That is fascinating and a really interesting area. We're going to have folks from Latin American countries where you can just kind of like do things. So that's going to be very interesting. It's going to be awesome. One area that we are weak on. So putting out the request to both of you guys and other people on the show, we want the data center energy people from the hyperscalers.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got some of the neoclouds. I mean, we're open to more neocloud people as well, but we want to make sure Google, XAI, Microsoft, AWS are represented. We have some ends there, still confirming those people, but that's, you know, I almost think about it kind of like two tracks I'm excited about. One is the big money, right? So we want to have, a lot of the finance guys are not listed on the website. The ones that are coming, they like to keep a low profile. So I've learned in the last couple of weeks, but we will have people that are financing these things. We want to make sure we have the guys that are actually spending. That would be the hyperscalers. And then I'm going to have another sort of like segment be more of the open source stuff. So in the same way that, you know, there's like the BitAx to kind of contrast the big public miners, I want to make sure there is a track to encourage people to be able to spin some of this stuff out on their own communities. And has nothing to do with like profitable or venture back or any of that. I just think it's really cool. The more people can take control of their own lives, build their own microgrids, have their own solar, their own mining, their own storage, their own personal servers, which we'll talk about. Like, I want to make sure both of those are represented. So.
And I know one of the things that you were sort of theorizing or hypothesizing is that it may be that there's going to be an explosion of new companies, or there's one new company that needs to get built that nobody's working on yet. Or do you have a sense yet? Have you kind of, from putting this together, talk to more people, have you gotten a sense that like sort of what might kind of emerge, or what kind of things might emerge as a result of all the people getting connected and new ideas getting shared?
I mean, We'll see. I'm super open-minded. I mean, personally, right? Like my day job, occasionally, every once in a while, I don't just shit talk on PBJ. Every once in a while, I actually do some investing work. So, I mean, I do have something I want to talk about on this. So yes, personally, I want to fund a couple companies that ideally spin out of this, or maybe, you know, are sort of like the initial kind of like, whatever the analogy is, Tinder, the spark for.
Well, that's why I think it's important to the best of our ability, make the content available to the rest of the world.
So other
because while we'll have a bunch of amazing people here, there's a ton of amazing people outside that won't be there who might start a company that you want to invest in.
It's a great point. And we're going to do, we'll find a way to get as much of that public as we can, and maybe even live. But that's one sort of selfish goal I have, is like, I would love to fund, you know, be the absolute first money into some of these companies, or even help incubate and like actually roll up my own sleeves. This is like the first field where I've gotten excited to like actually like really like do operational things, which I, you know, prefer more of the platonic ideal of thinking and whatnot. This is so exciting. So one of the things I wanted to mention is, I don't know if we'll have this as a panel or breakout group, but I also want to focus on like sort of the Bitcoiners that started off as Bitcoin people and are now more generic energy people. So, without getting into too many details, you know, I'm an investor in Satoshi Energy, and it's been crazy to watch them go from Bitcoin sort of brokering like between stranded wind in West Texas and miners now into AI compute, and just watch their numbers just go vertical. Now there is some public stuff. I shared this on LinkedIn because everyone knows that's the network where I'm not nerfed and where all the alpha is. They announced 2.8 gigawatts of new projects they're developing. 2.8 gigawatts. That's a big fucking deal. And you know, a year ago that would have been inconceivable for Bitcoin miners, right? So that's one example.
Oops, I should have invested.
Yeah. I'm about to give my miss here in just a minute. Crusoe, I mean, similar numbers. We're gonna have some folks from Crusoe, at least one person to be announced, but they were, you know, they were a good company when they were doing Bitcoin mining. They're like one of the five sexiest companies in the world, probably, or 10 or whatever it is right now, now that they're doing AI. And then I want to just give a shout out to the Giga guys, Alex and I. Alex has been hustling. He's been well with events with you, me. We went to a dinner or a party, some like event for SF Tech Week, which I didn't think was a thing, because I was like, isn't every week in SF Tech Week? But apparently there's SF Tech Week. Who knew? And it was super fun. And like these guys, it was like a German like Oktoberfest thing. And like, these guys were all dressed up as Oktoberfest people, but it turns out they're like, it was just like, what is going on here? But it turns out they're, you know, extremely serious entrepreneurs. And man, so I shout out to those guys. One of the co-founders will be joining us for the summit. I'm really excited to have him there. But their story is incredible as well. This is my miss. I don't even remember this, but I chatted with the CEO for a long time that dinner, and he was like, yeah, dude, like we chatted like years ago, you passed. And I was like, I don't even remember. I really don't even remember. But like, you know, they raised very small amount of money and have mostly bootstrapped since then. But it's, I mean, they were telling me some numbers that just any venture capitalist would blow your mind on what they're developing right now. And it, you know, part of what they're doing is they're making transformers. They're actually making their own, they're building a factory to make transformers in Texas. That's crazy talk. That is crazy talk. And the cool thing for them is like, you know, it doesn't matter what it's Bitcoin, AI compute, solar, nuclear, whatever. Everyone needs transformers. You cannot buy transformers. Everyone needs transformers. And so I was going down this like being, I mean, hats off to those guys because they did it all themselves. But the thing that I wanted to mention on the show today that really clicked for me when talking to those guys was, you know, when I was first writing that paper, the Bitcoin is key to an abundant, clean energy future, I had a lot of things right, but I didn't exactly see one critical piece. You know, I thought it was going to be more the Bitcoin miners come in first, kind of like get a system set up, and then maybe a bigger off-taker, you know, I was thinking green hydrogen, maybe compute, but whatever comes in later, desal, you know, carbon capture, air, whatever. What I kind of missed was, at least what's happened to date, the real sort of alpha or secret was those companies that started off doing Bitcoin mining just got such a far head start in understanding the markets, in cornering supply chains, and in getting very scarce assets like grid interconnects. And, you know, maybe some people will say we all got lucky. Maybe some people will say that it was, You know, Bitcoiners understanding scarcity, maybe. But what has actually played out in practice with companies like Satoshi and Giga and all these guys is the Bitcoiners, you know, those guys, when they started the company, they're like 22 or 23 years old. They're like 27 now, right? And it's wild. And if you had gone 5 years ago as a 22-year-old and be like, I'm going to like manufacture trans, like people would have laughed at you. Hyperscalers would never work with you in a million years, ever. You know who would work with you? The Bitcoin miners. Mm-hmm. Why? Because these guys are cowboys or like kind of like skirting on the edge of like society. Anyway, it's the same thing with like everything with Bitcoin. It's like, because they're, it's a free market, they really need this thing. Most people did not take them seriously, would not give them lines of credit. Banks won't even give them like a document they need to be able to sign for offtake. So they had to work with like the pirates and the renegades
everything
and the weirdos.
Everything comes from the edge.
Everything goes from the edge. And so it's just like you have like kids, like literal 22-year-old kids who would never have been taken seriously are able to get this huge head start because the renegades literally can't get any financing or like no, the traditional mainstream would not work with them. So the kids, you have an opportunity. The kids get so far ahead and it's like, you know, maybe they're not as good at first, but eventually they learn and they try stuff and they get better and better and they develop the relationships and the suppliers realize they're real. 6 years in, the serious guys want to come to the party. Good luck. You're 6 years behind.
Yeah.
And so to me, that's been the big story with Bitcoin energy so far is because you could start with the renegades and the weirdos, people on the fringes had an opportunity to get a huge head start and like, it's going to be hard to catch.
So I... Coming away,
and I wish I'd invested in that company. I'm kicking myself even more than you are.
So I know we're sort of over time or at time now. But I want to just mention one thing. I feel like Max, you have so many great resources on energy and kind of learning about this. And I wonder. I almost imagine there should be like hivemind.vc/energycannon, and just like kind of like what Jameson Lopp I think has kind of for intro to, you know, everything about Bitcoin or you know. A16Z did it for shitcoins. I think they have the crypto canon, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like I'd like to read the energy canon, which is just like, here's all the best episodes of the podcast, the episodes on YouTube, the Casey or whatever, you know, the blogs that I should read, the blog posts, the specific posts. So I can kind of get an overview of all of the modern relevant ideas and you kind of just like curate that set, put it out there. And then I think it also can show people your interest, but also help promote the event and get the right people involved, you know, sort of just
it's a great
another
idea.
Bad signal.
I love it. And I should totally put that list together and like, yeah, and like open source or whatever, like people can contribute their own, but they're, yeah, it's,
yeah, maybe it's a GitHub page or something.
Yeah, GitHub. It's a great
idea. Great at the AI slop. He'll just slop stuff together for you.
DK, do you have any questions about energy? Maybe 450 or so that you'd like to send my way?
I will generate 450 questions. About
420,
energy.
Sorry, please. Okay. 69, actually. That's my
last. I'll share it down to 69 that I actually am interested in.
Thank God. Right. It's a good idea. And just in general, like I think maybe one of my biggest things I want to leave folks with, because I saw Deanna put this love people on the fringes, is like, you know... there are days when it's frustrating because you're just like, man, like mainstream tech has just like got all the like the money and this and that. And it's like, first of all, yeah, but like I always think of the Steve Jobs quote. It's like, why join the Navy when you could be a pirate? Like at the end of the day, being on the fringes, working on like the weird stuff we do with principles, with values, caring about freedom, it's just so much more fun.
100%.
And then eventually it does work. Like it takes time, but like eventually that's where the transformative ideas come from. So.
Yep.
Wholeheartedly agree. Yeah.
All right.
We call it
that. Let's wrap it.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
Good to hang, guys. Thanks.
Good chat.
Times. All right. Bye-bye.